I'd be happy to refer the court specifically. The paperwork is in there, but the unsworn denial has the effect of only admitting the underlying claim, not the attorney's fees that were developed in anticipation of trial, because those are still a variable factor, I think.
Your contention is that some demand other than this affidavit had to be made and none was made.
That they must prove that demand was made 30 days prior. What they proved was that demand was made 21 days prior or more. And that's an important distinction. I don't know if the court's familiar with the remainder of this case, but I suffered the wrong side of a fairly technical result of the law, and I'm going to ask that that same technicality be applied to the other side as well. It may be a little technical, but I think that proof that a demand was made at least 21 days ahead of time does not qualify as proof that it was made at least 30 days ahead of time, not in a summary judgment proceeding. If I may continue on, the another response that is at least in the appellee's response to my application for writ of error, it states that a distinction between claim must have been made 30 days ahead of time and proof of claim having been made 30 days ahead of time. I do not allege that the proof of the claim must be filed 30 days prior. He could have filed it at 21, and he did. The problem is what he proved was that demand had been made as of that day only. You can file it at 21 days prior to hearing, but what is filed must state that it was done at least 8 or 9 days prior to then, or in some other wording that makes it clear to the court and for the record that judge that demand was made 30 days prior to trial. And what they have is a piece of paper filed on the 21st day that says demand was made. And I suspect a potential confusion, or at least argument along the line of trying to distinguish between proof of claim and the claim. I'm not saying that his response needed to be filed 30 days ahead of time. I'm not saying that. He could have filed it as he did it, provided he worded it better and said that demand had been made at least eight or nine days previous to that. He did not. All we have, it was, demand was made as of the 21st day before trial, and that's all we have.
Well, I have a little more, and that is a statement in the pleadings sometime earlier saying presentment had already been made. Why doesn't the affidavit refer to that?
Why doesn't their affidavit refer to that? That's a good question. I hope that he can answer that. I will state that. I will certainly stipulate and admit that the petition said demand had been made. The Supreme Court has ruled several times that pleadings are not summary judgment evidence. He pled it, but he didn't prove it, which is my point. This is not a very complicated case. I don't know that I need the full 15 minutes. I see the green light. I've got a few more. If there's any other questions that the court has, I'd be happy to answer, but I don't feel like I need to take up a lot further of the time. Not much more time on it. I've stated my case, and anything else I say would be just repetitive.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear arguments from respondents.
And please, the court, Mr. William Duty, will submit arguments for respondents.
May it please the court, I'm Bill Dugan from Bernie, Texas, up here representing Mr. Perry Logan. I think two points have been brought out, but I feel like they should be elaborated on. In the original petition, verified with affidavit on May 12th, Mr. Logan stated demand had been made. Due to a statutory deficiency in the answer, the appeals court overruled his writ of error and also granted attorney fees. The point is that an affidavit was filed, summary judgment was filed with affidavit attached, wherein Mr. Adams, who was Mr. Logan's attorney, stated that he was pleading for attorney fees and gave the basis for it, stated that demand had been made, this is the second time, and this is on the 29th of July. The hearing was held on the 21st of August. Mr. Dawson's opinion is that that cannot in any way qualify to allow the 30 days to pass before summary judgment could be granted on attorney fees. I think that the statute and the rules state that when judgment is rendered, and in this case, based on the record sent up to fourth court, the transcript, the court reporter's transcript, was ambiguous. It first stated judgment for the plaintiff, and then defendant's motion granted. On September the 11th, the trial judge signed an order for the plaintiff, Mr. Logan, and made the entry on the docket sheet. Now, that's well beyond the 30 days after the 29th of July, which was the day of the affidavit. In reading the transcript, the court reporter's transcript, it's evident that some county judges are just not aware, they're not attorneys, and they're confused. But based on the record itself, fourth court had no option except to grant attorney fees based on the record itself. As a matter of law, it signed on September the 11th, 30 days plus had passed, and attorney fees were awarded.
We have changed the rules to be clear that appeal time runs from the signing of the judgment. We still have out there a doctrine that a settlement agreement may be binding on the parties if the court orally renders judgment on it, to be set out in writing at a later time. Would it be better to have a rule that just says you don't have a judgment till you have the judge's signature?
Yes, sir. It certainly would. And the statutes and the rules are disjunctive. They say oral or written. In this case, I feel like the written judgment on September the 11th is the one that has to be gone by. An oral judgment rendered was ambiguous and is corrected, not nunc pro tunc, but it was corrected on September the 11th, and that is the record of the court. That is the law. But it would facilitate matters. Rendition of judgment, I know that phrase was taken when 306A came in as to the time on appeal. And it said it doesn't apply to anything else. But still, rendition of judgment is a term that we use, and it's disjunctive, oral, or written. In this case, I feel like it's written.
There's at least one court of criminal appeals case, counsel, I believe, where the divorce was granted and pronounced in open court. The guy went to his quote then ex-wife house that night and raped her. He was charged with rape and convicted and put in penitentiary, even though the judgment had not been signed.
Well, that certainly is a different kind of case from this suit on sworn account and summary judgment. The severity, of course.
But there are a number of cases that we have in this court that say that pronouncement of the judgment in open court is the time that the judgment takes effect.
Yes, sir. But may I reiterate the pronouncement by the court was for both parties. First the plaintiff, then the defendant. There was no judgment rendered on that day. That was definitive. And Mr. Adams, then attorney for Mr. Logan, and Mr. Dawson, sent the order to the county judge, and he signed it on the 11th of September. And so made the entry on 11 September that judgment was rendered in favor of plaintiff.
But you're saying there was no pronouncement of
judgment
previous to that time?
There was none. And the fourth court looked at it as being...
There was a statement from the bench.
I beg your pardon?
There was a statement from the bench.
Yes, sir.
Saying there was no pronouncement of judgment.
There were two statements from the bench, and one was for plaintiff, one was for defendant. The final thing... The
that
final word
resolved,
issued.
That was resolved in the final judgment.
In the written judgment on September the 11th for plaintiff. Yes, sir. I have a court reporter's transcript of the hearing. One other point I'd like to make, I feel like when the affidavit for attorney fees was filed on July 29th, appellant had options to file special exceptions objecting to our plea for attorney fees or controverting affidavits or whatever, but he failed to do that, and I feel like that he waived his argument for that he has made that no evidence was submitted. He could have controverted or filed certain pleadings, special exceptions, and did not. But I do think the crux of this is the date of judgment, which is well beyond the 30 days.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Please, the court, I would like to very briefly address the matters just raised. First of all, to clarify the record, I don't see much doubt in what the record says. I would like to quote that to the court. Number one, the judgment itself says the hearing was had on August the 19th. The transcript that is in the record states on August the 19th came on to be heard the above entitled cause. And let's get to whether or not the court resolved the issues of that case. There were legal arguments. There's about 4 or 5 pages of transcript regarding arguments, at the very end of which it says, the court is going to rule in favor of the plaintiff and his motion for summary judgment, and the case will be dismissed at this time. I suspect that was a mistake. But he said that the court is going to rule in favor of plaintiff and his motion for summary judgment.
There's an ambiguity in what happened when the court made his oral pronouncement.
I think he made a mistake. I would not call that an ambiguous mistake. He made a plain, simple mistake. He said, I'm ruling for plaintiff. There's about another sentence or two that if I can go through, I think places in context exactly what he meant. And I would certainly distinguish a mistake from an ambiguity. In other words, I think he made a mistake when he said, if I can just read through it, let me come back and comment.
But then you're saying that he did make a mistake, but that was later corrected.
Yes, Judge.
In the written judgment.
Yes, he said before and after that he was ruling in favor of plaintiff. He said the case will be dismissed. I cannot believe that under any stretch of the imagination he meant that. He said it fairly clearly. May I read it?
But then no one proceeded as if the case had been dismissed.
Correct, Judge. Nobody believed the case was dismissed.
So y'all actually acted on the written judgment.
There was no further clarifications. There were no further hearings. There were no requests for clarification. I received a judgment within a matter of days based on exactly what the court had ruled, which, if I may proceed on, it says the court's going to rule in favor of the plaintiff and his motion for summary judgment, and the case will be dismissed at this time. I would like to see the rule that you're referring to. And you're asking for a jury trial, and that fee was not paid. And take note that the defendants were not present at the time set for trial. And that's going to be my decision. And I clarified. The defendant's summary judgment granted, yes. May we be excused.
But then if you're arguing that the oral pronouncements are definitive, then the case was dismissed?
I wish it was. I mean, the court would like to make that the ruling. That'd be just fine, Judge. Obviously, that was not what the judge stated.
But neither you or the other side has taken the position that the case was dismissed, that the case was actually a judgment was rendered with the written judgment.
Yes, Judge, that's exactly what did happen as a practical matter. The judge, Mr. Dugan, is correct that this is not an attorney who was pronouncing judgment. As a practical matter, he was facing a room of 45 people that were brought in to support the defendants and his competence. He knew everybody there. He ruled in favor of plaintiff. The whole courtroom clapped. Everybody was happy. Handshaking going on, etc. That was the actual scenario. I do not believe there was any doubt in the judge's mind or in Mr. Adams's mind at that point who had won the case. They were all quite happy at that point. and I received the judgment immediately thereafter with no request for clarification to the court on any matter. The judge made it very clear what he wanted, although he stated it perhaps less than artfully. He made it clear his intention was to rule in favor of plaintiff. And I'm not aware of that even being a point in contention until I just heard it right now. It had never been raised in the pleadings at the appellate level or in response to my application for writ of error. This is the first I've heard of the potentiality of an ambiguity in the judge's ruling. Whether or not the court should change the rule regarding judgments, if I can just very briefly address that, it occurs to me that when a judge makes a ruling from the bench, there has got to be significance to that. To say that it is irrelevant until it's actually signed, I think creates a great deal of havoc for the period between pronouncement and signature. I agree it's a little complicated because in some cases you look at the date of pronouncement for certain events, and at other times you look at the date of rendition, I mean at the date of signature, but there's good reasons for that. If the judge orders something from the bench, that ought to be sufficient to hold somebody in contempt, and the people ought to follow it right then and there, not 2, 3, 4 weeks, a month later when the judgment gets signed. And in this particular, I see my time has run out. Were there any other questions?
Anything further? You may finish your sentence.
Thank you. If I may, very briefly, in this particular case, the idea is you have to allow 30 days in order to be able to make payment if you want. And in this case, there is some good reasons to follow this. I mean, they have to have given us 30 days to make a demand and allow us 30 days to pay it. And if his rationale is right, then we would have time after judgment to pay within the 30 days and pay the judgment and not be suffering the liability for attorney's fees. It does not make sense to say, let's not look at the date of announcement, we're going to look at the date of rendition, I mean the date of signature, when I've got no option to pay this judgment for the remaining 9 or 10 days. That'll do a lot of havoc to this 30-day rule, considering we've only got 21 days for trial settings. It doesn't make sense to say that it's the date of signature that applies for the 30-day rule. Because obviously we could just pay it afterwards, contrary to what the judge said, and end up paying it.
That's a long enough sentence.
Thank you, Judge.
The foregoing three causes are submitted on brief and oral arguments. That concludes the court's arguments for the morning. We'll be in recess until 2 o'clock. The marshal will adjourn the court.
Giants, please rise. OEA, OEA, OEA. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned. Subject to call.